Welcome to Tori Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yechezkel Perek Gimel, Chapter 3. Last Perek, we saw Yechezkel get a taste of what his mission is going to be, and it is a difficult and enigmatic one. His goal seems to be not to change the people, but to tell of what is to come, so that when the devastation does happen, the people will know that it was from Hashem. The Perek ends with a hand reaching out to Yechezkel, holding a scroll with words of eulogies written on both sides. Hashem tells Yechezkel to open his mouth and eat the scroll. Perek Gimel picks up in the middle of the story of the scroll and forms the third Perek of Yechezkel's Hakdasha, or his initiation. The Perek begins with Hashem commanding Yechezkel to open his mouth and eat the scroll. Yechezkel does. Ve'eftach et pi, and I open my mouth, v'yochleini et ha-migilah hazot, and Hashem actually feeds him the scroll. V'yomer elai in Pasuk Gimel, Hashem says to me, Ben Adam, son of man, bitnecha tochel u'me'echa temalei, fill your stomach with this scroll, et ha-migilah hazot, asher ani noten elecha, that I am giving you, v'achla, and I ate it, says Yechezkel, v'tihi b'fi, kidvash lamatok, and it was in my mouth as sweet as honey. Yechezkel's visceral experience of God is multifaceted. On the one hand, Hashem is forcing him to eat the scroll that's filled with difficult words, with eulogies. On the other hand, here is this scroll that's sweet in Yechezkel's mouth. These dark prophecies turn into honey as they touch his tongue. This episode encapsulates the complex relationship between Hashem and Yechezkel. On the one hand, Yechezkel has no name. He is Ben Adam, an object of God's will, one who must do an incredibly difficult job, who does not speak back, does not argue, is just directed by God. On the other hand, Yechezkel is incredibly close to Hashem. He is fed by Hashem, the way a parent feeds a child, and the food is sweet in his mouth. The dialectic between having absolutely no agency in his life to do a difficult mission and the closeness that the mission provides yields a complex picture. To add to this complexity, Hashem tells Yechezkel again that he will be addressing a people who will not listen to him. They've hardened their hearts against him. They will not change. In fact, says Hashem, had Yechezkel been sent to another nation, even if he didn't speak their language, they probably would listen to him. However, Ubeit Yisrael in Pasuk Zayin, Bnei Yisrael, lo yavu lishmo elecha. They won't want to listen to you. Ke'enam ovim lishmo elai, because they don't want to listen to me. Ki kol Beit Yisrael chizkei metzach ukshei lev hema. All of the Jews have hardened their foreheads and stiffened their hearts. It's nothing to do with your presentation, Yechezkel. It's not personal, and it's not about you, but rather, says Hashem, it's about me. They have an unwillingness to agree with the concept of what you're saying. Yechezkel is once again directed to go and give a message to the Jews, and once again, the message is not told to him. In Pasuk Yud, Hashem comes to Yechezkel, Vayomer Elai, he says to me, Ben Adam, son of man, et kol devarai asher adaber elecha, kach bilvavacha ubaznacha shema. All the words that I'm going to tell you, take them in your heart and listen to them with your ears. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, v'lech ba el hagola, al b'nei amecha, and with this, go to the people of the exile, to the people of your community, v'dibarta aleihem, and speak to them, v'amarta aleihem, Ko amar Hashem Elokim, and say to them, so says Hashem, im yishma'u, im yachdalu, will they listen, will they stop? And you remember two interpretations of that phrase. One is, and it means that they won't stop, and the other one is, even if they would stop, that we spoke about last parak. Right after the words, ko amar Hashem Elokim, Hashem interrupts again, subverting the mission itself and telling Yechezkel, im yishmu'u im yachdalu, they will certainly not listen to you. While we are mulling over, the reader is mulling over these confusing signals and trying to figure out what it is that Yechezkel is really here to do, the text suddenly interrupts our thoughts and we remember that we're actually in the middle of a nevuah, a vision that started back in chapter 1, a vision of Hashem and the angels and Hashem's lofty chariot. And Yechezkel says in Pasuk Yud Bet, Vatisa eni ruach, just then a wind picked me up. Ve'eshma acharai kol ra'ash gadol. I hear behind me a great noise. And the great noise, this voice screams out, Baruch kavod Hashem yimkamo. Blessed is Hashem from his place. The ruach, this wind that we experienced in Perek Aleph, that stood Yechezkel on his feet, now returns. And Yechezkel is once again carried into the world of Hashem, and he now once again encounters the angels, and he hears them praising Hashem. Their praise are words that we say every day in Kedusha, during Shemona Esrei, when we quote the angels, and that is, Baruch Kavod Hashem Imkamo, blessed is Hashem from his place. Abarbanel looks at this praise of Hashem and interprets it in the following way. Blessed is Hashem, even though he has departed from his place. Meaning, not blessed is Hashem from his place and this kind of understanding of Hashem's distance, but rather, blessed is Hashem who is not in his place. Mimikomo, he has moved from his place. Now this praise of Hashem, the way the Abarbanel interprets it, says that Hashem is no longer in his place. He is no longer in Eretz Yisrael or in the place, the spiritual place that he would want to be in, but rather he is in exile with his people. The vision that started with a moving chariot continues now into the praise of Hashem. Now this is the opposite of the praise that Yeshayahu heard the angels saying to Hashem in his vision, which was in Yeshayahu chapter 6, those angels say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Svakot, Malo Kol Ha'aretz Kvodo. Holy, holy, holy. Hashem fills the world with his kavod. As opposed to this, we hear, Yechezkel hears, Baruch Kvod Hashem Imkamo, blessed is Hashem from his place. Yeshayahu sees the angels praising Hashem's holiness or his separateness, and the whole world is impacted by his glory, which is represented by the Beit HaMikdash. But now, Hashem's presence is in exile, and it is this element of God that the angels praise. The care that Hashem has for his nation, how unconnected he is to holy space, how he's able to not be in his makom, in his place. His presence is felt even in exile. Yechezkel witnesses this unbelievable scene and hears the voice of the angels. He absorbs all of this silently, without comment, without response, and he is then dismissed from the vision and told to rejoin the people. Yechezkel goes to the city of Tel Aviv, which actually in Tanakh is a Babylonian city where the Jews lived, and he stays with the people for 7 days. You can just imagine the changed person Yechezkel must be, knowing now what his new mission is for these people, having eaten the scroll, having experienced Hashem, and yet at the same time not really understanding his mission or how he's supposed to accomplish it. Hashem then returns to Yechezkel and unfolds another layer in Yechezkel's role. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, Ben Adam, son of man, Tzofeh Nitaticha lebe Yisrael, I've made you a watchman for Bnei Yisrael, for the house of Israel. V'shamata mipi davar, you're going to hear something from me, his harta otam mimeni, and you are going to give them a warning from me. These words, Tzofeh Nitaticha, and the idea of Yechezkel giving Bnei Yisrael a warning, his harta otam, are going to become crucial concepts for Yechezkel. The text explains further, and I'm going to quote psukim that Yechezkel says, but he also actually says the opposite. So I'm going to quote the psukim he says about the Rasha, but the psukim go on, the evil person, but he goes on to say the same thing. The same is true about the tzaddik. Okay, pasuk yirchat, Hashem is going to explain, what does it mean to be this tzofet, and what does it mean to his harta otam? What does it mean to be a watchman, and what does it mean to give a warning? But amri la Rasha, mot tamud, velo his harto, if there is a person who does something wrong, Hashem says to Yechezkel, he's a Rasha, and really, he's going to die because of that, and you knew it, and you didn't warn him, and you didn't take it upon yourself to say to him, this is wrong, to try to change him from his ways, and allow him to live, so then he will die of his sin, but I will also seek his blood from your hand. Meaning, if you don't warn somebody, you are actually, to a certain extent, responsible also for their sin. They're responsible, but you're also responsible. Va'ata, ki his heart a rasha, if you do warn someone, v'lo shav mi risho, and you do, that person does not change away from his bad deeds, umidarko harasha, and from his bad ways, hu ba'avono yamut, va'ata et nashecha hitalta. He will die in his sin, but you won't. You will have saved your soul. And with this, Hashem really explains a little bit more to Yechezkel. What does it mean that he's going to be just warning the people? So warnings in the Torah are really crucial. In Torah law, a person cannot be punished unless he or she has received a warning first. This will lead to most courts being unable to convict people of crimes that it's clear they did. But no matter, a person must receive a fair opportunity, even at the last minute, to turn back from their evil ways and change. And if there's no warning, the court can't punish them. Yechezkel is that warning. He is a tzofeh. He sees what's going to happen in the future. He's a watchman. He sees much farther than other people, farther away. And he will be that warning. He'll tell them what's coming. The warning will serve two purposes. One, there is always a chance that the people will change. Not a good one, but the Mefarshim always interpret the statements about Bnei Yisrael having a hard heart that it will be difficult to change, but not impossible. Okay, so a warning perhaps can change them. But two, what a warning does is it connects the punishment directly to the crime. Meaning, if somebody says, if you steal the money, you will get put in jail, when that person does steal the money and does get put in jail, they will realize the connection between stealing the money and getting put in jail. So the connection between the punishment and the crime is crucial, and this is crucial for the rebuilding that will happen afterwards, that people will understand that the punishment was connected to the crime, and when they decide to make a new society, they can try to create a society that's different than the one that they had before. The end of the parak really bears out this message. Hashem speaks to Yechezkel a third time and tells him now to shut himself in his house and tie himself up with ropes. Rashi explains that these are not literal ropes, but rather that he should just not leave his house. Instead, the people are going to come to Yechezkel's house to see him and watch what he does. And this will be explained in the next parak. Hashem ends the parak by saying, I'm going to stick your tongue to the roof of your mouth, and you are going to become mute, and you won't be a person who's rebuking them because they are a rebellious nation. But in Pasuk of Zion 27, Ubedavri Otach, when I speak to you, Eftach et Picha, I'll open your mouth, Va'amarta Lam, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim. There it is again, the Ko Amar Hashem Elokim, without being followed by a message. You're going to say to him, so says Hashem, Ashomea Yishma, V'Hachdel Yachdel. Those who listen will listen. Those who stop doing their bad deeds will stop. Ki Beis Meri Hema. They are a rebellious nation. Yechezkel's job is not to give rebuke on his own, but rather it's to give a warning. A warning really is different than a rebuke. He's really there to say only what Hashem wants him to say. Hashem will only open up his mouth when he wants him to speak. And he's going to not only warn, but he's going to act out the impending disaster. He's going to put on this kind of strange theater inside his house. And Hashem commands Yechezkel to be mute. He is not going to interact with the people except to say his nevuah. And again, the actual words of the nevuah are interrupted after the introduction of Ko Amar Hashem. However, the last phraseology, Hashomea Yishma V'Hachdel Yachdel, whoever will listen, whoever will stop, does leave a little bit more room for Yechezkel's actions to cause people to reevaluate their actions. Now, before we end, I just want to speak a bit more about why is Hashem sending Yechezkel. The contradictory messages of telling him to speak, but not now telling him what to say, sending him Bnei Israel, but telling them that also that they won't listen to him, sending him to the people, but then drawing him back into his house, opening his mouth at the beginning of the parak, but then telling him at the end that he'll be mute and closing his mouth. Why send a Navi that can't do the regular job of a Navi? So I think the answer is that Yechezkel is not a regular Navi. A Navi's job is to warn the people. That is his whole life. His job is to give rebuke, but his nevuah is not supposed to come true. His whole life is spent trying to avert some type of terrible disaster, some type of event, by using his speech, by speaking to the people. Yechezkel is not exactly a Navi in that way. He's a tzofeh. He's one who sees out into the distance and tells what is coming. Now, people get stuck in certain conceptions and certain ways of viewing the world that they actually can't see anything that doesn't align with this conception. Anything that happens that doesn't fit with the way they see the world is just glossed over, ignored, or fought against. If this way of seeing the world is wrong, then it will inevitably lead to something bad happening. Think about certain products that everyone thought was safe and good, except for a few voices who were quickly shut down because they didn't fit with the way everything was supposed to go, but actually these products were completely unsafe. The disaster that comes from these types of misconceptions will almost definitely happen because people will not change their entire way of thinking and acting. And then after the disaster, there's lots of hand-wringing and lots of Monday morning quarterbacking, lots of 20/20 hindsight. And this type of hindsight is very valuable in order not to make the mistake again. But what is more valuable is the one or two people in society that never fell prey to the misconception in the first place, meaning those contrary voices, those people shouted from the rooftops, they were ignored because what they were saying was too uncomfortable, too outlandish to possibly be true. But then after the disaster, their words become the playbook by which to rebuild, not just to rebuild the society that was with like a slight adjustment that we're not going to make those exact same mistakes, but to rebuild a new society that won't fall prey to the type of misconceptions of which people can't hear anything that they disagree with and they can't consider anything that makes them uncomfortable. They're probably not going to make those same mistakes again. They'll make different mistakes. And the society has to make sure that they can fix those mistakes also when somebody brings them up to them. Yechezkel will make sure that after the disaster, they can't abdicate responsibility. It wasn't inevitable. Someone saw what was coming. Someone warned you, even if it was just one person. Yechezkel is not going to stop the disaster from coming. But without a tzofeh like Yechezkel, then afterwards, people could say, we weren't really at fault because no one saw it coming, and therefore no one could have stopped it. Without Yechezkel, the new society won't be able to use this as a learning experience when they have to build something new. Hopefully something better, hopefully a society that doesn't fall prey to its own hardened conceptions of the world, that it can't hear any dissenting voices. Thank you for learning together. Le'ilu Nishmas Barbara Atlas Bracha Bas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.